हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 65, chapter 8, Markandeya's prayers to Narayan Rishi. Verses 32 to 49, Markandeya's prayers to Narayan Rishi. Sutta Goswami continued, desiring to bestow his mercy upon the saintly Markandeya, who had perfectly fixed his mind in self-realization through penance, Vedic study, and observance of regulative principles, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appeared before the sage in the forms of Nara and Narayana. One of them was of whitish complexion, and the other blackish, and they both had four arms. Their eyes resembled the petals of blooming lotuses, and they wore garments of black deerskin and bark, along with three strands of sacred thread. Right? Because Brahmacharya, right? In their hands, which are most purifying, they carried the mendicant's water pot, straight bamboo staff, and lotus seed prayer beads, as well as all purifying Vedas in the symbolic form of bundles of dharva grass. Their bearing was tall, and their yellow effulgence and color of their yellow effulgence, the color of radiant lightning, appearing as austerity personified. They were being worshipped by the foremost demigods. These two sages, Nara and Narayana, were the direct personal forms of the Supreme Lord. When Markandeya Rishi saw them, he immediately stood up and then, with great respect, offered them obeisances by falling down flat on the ground like a stick. Right, so he stood up, then he offered obeisances. He didn't just kind of, where he's sitting, roll forward, touch his head, and then roll back, right? You know, The ecstasy of seeing them completely satisfied Markandeya's body, mind, and senses, and caused the hairs on his body to stand on end and his eyes to fill with tears. Overwhelmed, Markandeya found it difficult to look at them. Standing with his hands folded in supplication and his head bowed in humility, Markandeya felt such eagerness that he imagined he was embracing the two lords. In a voice choked with ecstasy, he repeatedly said, "I offer you my humble obeisances." Unquote. He gave them sitting places and washed the feet. Then he worshipped them with presentations of argus, sandalwood pulp, fragrant oils, incense, and flower garlands. Markandeya Rishi once again bowed down at the lotus feet of those two most worshipable sages, who were sitting at ease, ready to bestow all mercy upon him. He then addressed them as follows. Sri Markandeya said, "O Almighty Lord, how can I possibly describe you? You awaken the vital air, which then impels the mind, senses, and power of speech to act. This is true for all ordinary conditioned souls, and even for great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. So it is certainly true for me. Nevertheless, you become the intimate friend of those who worship you." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "By you, the life air is made to move, and the voice, mind, and senses then act." Shruti says, "Shrotasya shrotram. The Lord is the ear of the ear." Kena Upanishad 1:2. "You enliven the senses not only of ordinary beings, but of Brahma and Shiva as well. What to speak of me? Like a friend, you are controlled by the love of those who worship you. You alone enable them to worship you by enlivening their minds and senses, yet you feel unable to repay the debt of their worship and become indebted and controlled by their love. That is the most astonishing. That is the greatness of your mercy." So the Lord's providing all the facilities for the devotee to do the worship. He gives the energy, everything. But when the devotee does it, the Lord is so pleased that he considers that it's not something you can pay back. Right? So, Does that make sense? Yes. So the devotional side is what's being brought out here.
Yes.
Right? So that aspect, that it's the devotion that matters. So from the converse we can understand is that if the secondary activities that he's dealing with, he doesn't consider that very significant. Right?
Yes.
It's the devotion of the devotees that is significant.
Yes.
So then, does that make sense?
Yes.
So,
yes.
The point is the secondary is not the prominent element.
Yes.
It's the devotion that's the prominent element.
Yes.
These are ornaments to the devotional mood.
Mm-hmm.
But they themselves on their own aren't special.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, it's just like ornaments. They're special because they're worn. They're not special because they're not worn.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you see them in context of how they will function in using them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that on their own they're complete.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the meaning. All these different things, one's culture, one's knowledge, one's intelligence, one's abilities, one's results, all these are ornaments.
Yes.
When they're offered to the Lord. But if they're not, then they're useless.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole thing. You have so many nice things, if they're not used, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So Maharaj, the Krishna and the pure devotees, they always see the primary first.
Yes, they always see the primary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point. So the devotees see the Lord sees the devotees.
Yes.
And that affection between them, that's actually the main thing. That's the primary aspect.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it means in the, you have in the Vibhava, Vishay and Ashray, that aspect. That he's the shelter, means he is the attractive, you know, feature, and the devotees the shelter of that particular attraction. Right, that particular devotion takes shelter of that devotee, and that's expressed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Lord is attracting the devotee is behaving in such a way to please the Lord that attracts the Lord. That's the essential point.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. That rati, that's the main point. The others, they are natural expressions of that.
Yes.
Right? So that's the point, is that, you know, as Janani Vyas Prabhu was saying, they glorify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you said, you know, why is Karma and Jnana here? Mm-hmm. In Vidyanagara? He says, because they're glorifying bhakti.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so all these different activities, they glorify bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
So Mother just showed us cooking. The cooking glorifies her devotion.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense? It's a different perspective. Because we tend to look at it that the secondary is important, but the Lord, he arranges everything, but because he doesn't consider that to be important. Does that make sense? So, yeah. So even though he is the life force, so that means everything functions because of that, the results of that, he means the endeavor and there and all that, he doesn't consider that that's the great thing. But the devotion that the devotee has in expressing what he does when that life air is moving, you know, by the Lord's grace, then that's what the Lord considers valuable. Right? So in other words, secondary is there, but that's just that. It's secondary. Markandeya continued, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, these two personal forms of yours have appeared to bestow the ultimate benefit for the three worlds. The cessation of material misery and conquest of death. My Lord, although you create this universe and then assume many transcendental forms to protect it, you also swallow it up, just like a spider who spins and later withdraws its web. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Therefore, you appear in this world to allow us to worship you and to let yourself be controlled by the prema of your devotees with matured bhakti. But not only for this purpose do you appear. You come to protect the universe. That is explained in this verse. Mrityu, jityai, means forgiving liberation. Just as you assume various other forms like Matsya and Kurma, you now appear in these two forms. However, accepting these forms, Shishva, you then make them disappear, just as the spider produced and devours his web. This verse praises the greatness of the Lord's pastimes. So you see, again, like all the prayers, they always, you see, is that basically speaking, they're always bringing out this, how do you say, the contrast, right? The opposites that are there in the Lord, that are so perfectly reconciled in the Lord. And others, they're a bit of a problem. Right? But in the Lord, then they're perfectly manifest. Remember all the different prayers we've seen all along. You know, so we're seeing that. They always bring this point out, how he's everything, but at the same time he's separate. You know, he creates it, he maintains it, but at the same time he destroys it, or all these different things. Yes.
Considering primary and secondary, we see often it happens that the secondary, it actually eclipses the primary, or the, you know, immediate goal eclipses the ultimate goal, and then we forget about the ultimate. So is that an intellectual effort, how we deal with this?
In the beginning, yes. Because it's just a matter of sense. Let's say your ultimate goal is to enjoy yourself. Then it will never be, the secondary will never eclipse that. Because we're just practiced at it.
Yeah.
So then, since we're switching our practice, it requires intelligence.
Yes.
Until it becomes. It's just like, let's say, for an example, for whatever reason, it's decided that the doorknob on one side of the door should actually be on the other. It's really inconvenient on this side of the door.
Yes.
Right? It's on the left, you move it to the right. Okay? You do that, the whole change. For how long will we be going to the left and going like this?
Yeah.
Right? For quite a while. And then, oh, yeah. You know? So it's intelligence, then you get it to switch. And then it becomes habit. So that's the point of sadhana bhakti, is that with intelligence, you're following the process. Then by following that, you get purified, you get a taste, and then it becomes habit after a while. So by the Lord's grace. Because just as the mundane has become habit for us, by the Lord's grace, the spiritual can become habit. So it's just a matter of being committed to it. So no matter what situation comes up, we're always committed to it, then we continue on. You know, just like whatever happens, you know, we're committed to our sense gratification. You know, we go to that place that we wanted to go to, you know, and have something to eat, it's closed. So then we'll drive all the way across the town to that other place that's the next best. You know? Is that it's just when you're committed like that, then it becomes fixed.
Material habits, they don't take time, you know, to cultivate. But
material happiness, they don't take time to cultivate.
Habits.
Material habits, they don't take time to cultivate.
Yeah, but spiritual habits, you know, they do take a lot of time. So.
Or material habits don't take time, you're saying.
Yeah.
Means not that we don't give time, they don't take it much time.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing them for a long time. Like Prabhupada said, I think it was about Ravi Shankar, he's been playing sitar for 1,000 lifetimes. That's why he does okay. You know? He's respected because he's, you know, he's always in that top few for 1,000 lifetimes. But there's better than him. So that means they've done, you know, a few more thousand. So, therefore, the reason it comes so naturally and so easily is because you've been doing it for so long. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're not talking about you just started this life. You know what I'm saying? Someone's a manager, they've been doing that a long time. That's why they move up. The guy's, you know, top in the you know, political scenes, because he's been doing that forever. You know, if they're top in the intellect, they've been doing that forever. Their business, they just naturally see, oh, we can do this, we can do that. They've been doing it forever. We think that the two kids went into the garage and started a billion dollar business. They've been doing this for a long time. Right? But still, they're starting in the garage. So give them a few more lifetimes, then they won't have to start in the garage. Right? They'll figure it out in their living room. Right? So the time's there. We don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So since we're, but that's the difference. As we said, it takes 1,000 lifetimes to become that well renowned. So we're talking about one lifetime of going back to Godhead. So it's a much quicker system.
Yes.
It's much more efficient. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and we're not even talking how many lifetimes he spent on the sewer petty. No? Too far back. You see a lot of times, it means now not as much, but before you'd have the... they're doing musical performance, like you have the Chennai and stuff like that. And so there's one guy doing all the amazing stuff. There's the other guy who's just playing one note the whole time. You don't notice it, but if you stop, you'll see. All he does is play the one note, you know, to give the background. And then if the other guy stops, you know, to take a breath, he's playing. Because he never stops. You know, they breathe in through their nose, you know, and then hold it in the mouth, and then it's a system. And so he's a musician, but that's all the more he does. You know, does that make sense? Or the guy playing the tambura, that's all they can do. Yeah, the surpeti is these little things that you just play them like this, they go, that's it. But he's a musician. He can sit there for 5 hours while they play the other stuff. Other people couldn't do that. So he's a musician, but his ability is not so much. So we're not talking about all those lifetimes. We're talking about 1,000 as a sitarist. Right? So in music, God only knows how many tens of thousands of lifetimes he's spent. Right? If you're here basically eternally, you know, you got to keep yourself busy. Right? You know, like that.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah. Here it is explained that there are two personal forms of the Lord. So it is Narayana, is Krishna and Arjuna.
Yes. And but they're referred to as one deity, but two forms. Just like Jagannath, Baladeva and Subhadra, one deity, three forms.
But in that case, Arjuna is considered like Vishnu-tattva?
No, he's Jiva. He's Nara and Narayana, because they go together, the Lord and the living entity, they go together. So it's showing that aspect, that they're non-different. At the same time, as you see, they're different. You can see two different people, but they're non-different because they're considered one deity.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Arjuna is the white one, and Narayana is the black one.
Yes. So they are always, Arjuna is always in the material world, to accompany the Lord.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Prabhupada mentioned you don't have a form of Arjuna in Goloka.
Yes.
Because he just performs the pastimes that the Lord performs within the material sphere. But he's always eternally liberated.
Yes.
Associate.
Yes.
That's why it said that for Bhagavad Gita, it's seemingly he's an illusion.
Yes.
But it's only Yoga Maya arranges so that Bhagavad Gita can be spoken. Because who else other than Arjuna could go from total illusion and attachment to the family to full, you know, pure Krishna consciousness in half an hour, right? How many times have we heard all these verses and it's still not working, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Markandeya continued, because you are the protector and the supreme controller of all moving and non-moving beings, anyone who takes shelter of your lotus feet can never be touched by the contamination of material work, material qualities, or time. Great sages who have assimilated the essential meaning of the Vedas offer their prayers to you. To gain your association, they bow down to you at every opportunity and constantly worship you and meditate upon you. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The contamination of bad conduct arising from karma, gunas, and time do not touch the devotees situated at your feet. This expresses the greatness of bhakti dedicated to the Lord. Actions, either pious or sinful, recent or ancient, do not touch the devotee, just as water does not touch the lotus leaf. The devotees, always silent, munayaha, who know the conclusion of the Vedas, meditate on the Lord to attain Him. So they know the conclusion of the Vedas, therefore they're always absorbed in the Lord.
Yes.
Right? Because if they didn't know the conclusion, they'd be absorbed in something else.
Yes.
Right?
Maharaj, when we say that to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord means to take shelter of the instructions,
it's just it means it's a matter of surrender, that the body, the mind, the words are engaged in the Lord's service. So it naturally be according to instructions given by the spiritual master. But the surrender is, it means it includes that.
Yes.
Because we might ourselves just start there. But it also concludes that devotion and that full commitment and all these other things that just naturally develop.
Yes. Yes.
So it's the whole process.
Yes. Yes.
Sri Markandeya continued, "My dear Lord, even Lord Brahma, who enjoys his exalted position for the entire duration of the universe, fears the passage of time. Then what to speak of those who Brahma creates, the conditioned souls," right? So he enjoys his position for the whole duration of the universe, and still he's fearful of time.
Yes.
So let alone those he creates, who live a touch less.
Yes.
Yes.
So this feeling of fear, we actually inherited from Brahma, because in the beginning of creation, he was fearful.
It's his fault, yeah. Now you know who to blame. Yeah. So it's not you. You're okay. You're great. You're right there. The point is that it's there in any conditioned living entity, because the soul, when they come into the world and they have these two illusions, Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. So Vaikuntha Brahma, they think everything's eternal. You know, our situation's eternal. The body, the family, the money, whatever it is that you gain in the material world, we function as if it's eternal. So we're very disappointed when we find out it's not. And Ananda Brahma, you actually think that one can become happy here. You can actually find that happiness and that satisfaction. So these two illusions, because that's the nature of the living entity. They're eternal, you know, Satchit and Ananda. So that's the whole point. So they try to put those together, you know, through their actions. But because they're not dedicated to the Lord, they're Asat, so they don't give any eternal result. And so then the passage of time will always create fear, because there's always loss. Everything's temporary. Does that make sense? That's the material phenomena. So when it says that the pure devotee becomes free from fear, means they're situated in their relationship with the Lord as servant, not necessarily the specific detail, you know, that I'm this, you know, person there, and I do this, and I wear that. No, you don't, not that. It just means that you're fully absorbed in that I'm servant of the Lord. Then there's no fear, because we're not the body, so if the body adjusts, what's the problem? Does that make sense? It's just like you're riding on the bus. When it gets to the, you know, wherever it is your stop, you just get off and keep your life goes on. So the point is because we identify with this body and everything connected, we think this is the life, it will end. So we're fearful. But when we see ourselves as servant of Krishna, we're not the body, we're the soul, then where's the end? Just from one thing you go into the next. Right? You take off one shirt, you put on another. Does that make sense? Hopefully there's a bath in between. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. They encounter fearful dangers at every step of their life, of their lives. I do not know of any relief from this fear except shelter at your lotus feet, which are the very form of liberation. Therefore, I worship your lotus feet, having renounced my identification with the material body and everything else that covers my true self. These useless, insubstantial, and temporary coverings are merely presumed to be separated from you. These useless, insubstantial, and temporary coverings are merely presumed to be separate from you. Okay. Those whose intelligence encompasses all truth. Okay. By attaining you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Soul, one attains everything desirable. So all these useless, insubstantial, and temporary coverings, they're presumed that they're separate. That's why they take on these qualities.
Yes.
When we understand their connection to the Lord, they don't have those qualities.
Yes.
Not that there won't be transformation, right? So we'll still, the manifestation of them will be temporary. But the potencies themselves and all that always remain. So, does that make sense? And the Lord remains, and the principles on which they're transforming remain. So when you see them connection to the Lord, then you get eternal benefit from those that interaction.
Yes.
But if you don't see it, if you see it separate from Krishna, then it is useless, insubstantial, and temporary. But we'll consider it very substantial and permanent and all. That's where the illusion is.
Yes.
Right? You know, that's the actual definition of Vivarta, is that you take one thing to be something else. So it's actually the Lord, but we take it as separate from the Lord.
Yes.
That's the illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So this Mayavad definition of Vivarta, that it doesn't exist, that's not an actual definition. Right? If there's no existence, why are you worried about seeming illusory existence? Because there isn't any. So why you're worried?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not a well thought out philosophy. So,
this is due to the lack of realization about the soul.
Yes.
It is an illusion.
Yes. Yes, it's lack of knowledge of the soul, and also of the Lord. Because the sages might have some understanding of the soul, but because they don't have understanding of the Lord, then that understanding of the soul is incomplete. And even if they understand the Lord, they don't understand the relationship between the soul and the Lord, then it's incomplete.
Yes.
Does that make sense? And that relationship is then in its perfect position on the platform of devotion. So it's always, you have that. That's why it says he's the supreme cause of all causes, so the ultimate goal.
Yes.
Because there's so many goals, and then there's the ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's so many causes of things that he's the ultimate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So always when you're endeavoring for something, there is a result, but that result is for something more.
Yes.
And if you keep following that line, it'll get back to Krishna.
Yes.
So you might as well just do it connected to Krishna instead of...
Yes, and save time.
Yes, save time. Save time.
Yes.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, giving up the covering on the Atma, possessiveness of the body and house, which is useless, apartam, insignificant, asat, and temporary, antyam. I worship the lotus feet of you, who have true knowledge. Right, so this possessiveness means is that the covering is the possessiveness. It's not having the house or having the body. It's the possessiveness that goes with it.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the mentality is important.
Yes. It's the mentality.
Yes.
It's the attitude.
Yes.
That's why it says the consciousness.
Yes.
It's that Krishna consciousness.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So when we're conscious of Krishna, then we know the house is Krishna.
Yes.
And it's for use in his service.
Yes.
So he is the house, he's the process that you can engage the house in his service. He's the results you can gain from engaging the house in his service. Right? And then he is the ultimately that devotion in which we're doing that. So that's the thing, he's all of the items. There's nothing that's left out. So he's even us who is doing the things with the house. Does that make sense? Like Krishna says in the, what is it, in the Gita, he says, you know, about the living room, he says, I am the sofa. I am the guy sitting on the sofa. Right? Yeah. I am the curtains that the guy on the sofa doesn't notice. All those things. Yeah. Right? If Krishna wasn't the socks on the floor, why would the wife get annoyed? The socks. It's a big deal. Because it's Krishna, that's why then there's annoyed.
Maybe if it was Krishna, she wouldn't be annoyed.
It is Krishna. I'm saying the substance of it is Krishna. But the point is that now we're talking about, are we talking about the front of Krishna or the back of Krishna?
So
the socks on the floor is the back of Krishna. Yeah.
That's what annoys the most. Yeah.
So in essence, even the secondary is everything is Krishna that we're dealing with. However, because the secondary is variegated, that's a distraction.
How is it variegated?
It is variegated. That's why it's a distraction.
Yes, because it's his energies. And so his energies, they take all these different forms. So that they're all the forms to be engaged in Krishna's service. So if we don't use them in Krishna's service, then that's considered improper. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's vikarma. We use it for Krishna, then that's proper. That's bhakti. Mm. Yeah. One who worships you also attains you, who know the service of the devotee. Hearing this, the Lord may say, then let those without material desire worship me. Let those with desires worship someone else. Yes. To which Markandeya Rishi responds, no, if someone attains you, he attains all desirable objects. Sri Markandeya continues, O my Lord, O supreme friend of the conditioned soul, although for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this world, you accept the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, which constitute your illusory potency, you specifically employ the mode of goodness to liberate the conditioned souls. The other two modes simply bring them suffering, illusion, and fear. The BBT purport states, the words lila dritaha indicate that the creative activities of Lord Brahma, the destructive activities of Lord Shiva, and the sustaining functions of Lord Vishnu are all pastimes of the absolute truth, Lord Krishna. But ultimately, only Lord Vishnu can award liberation from the clutches of material illusion, as indicated by the words sattva mayi prasantyai. Our passionate and ignorant activities cause great suffering, illusion, and fear for us and others. Therefore, they should be given up. One should become firmly situated in the mode of goodness and live peacefully on the spiritual platform. The essence of goodness is to renounce selfish interest in all one's activities and thus dedicate one's entire being to the Supreme Being. Oh, Supreme Being Lord Krishna is the source of our existence. The essence of goodness, right? So that means pure goodness. So goodness is we're performing our duties. Because we should. But within that, we might be performing the duties for ourselves, our own benefit. So when we perform those duties, we give up that desire for the benefit we'll get from those duties. And simply try to please Krishna. That then is pure goodness. Sri Markandeya continued, O Lord, because fearlessness, spiritual happiness, and the kingdom of God are all achieved through the mode of pure goodness. Spiritual happiness, fearlessness. Your devotees consider this mode, but never passionate ignorance, to be a direct manifestation of you. Right? So when we say everything's Krishna, we're not saying directly. It's through his energies.
Yes.
Right? But then the holy name is directly him. Prasad is directly him. The deity is directly him. Like this.
Yes.
So these are him personally. But other aspects, they're him because everything is him. So if you put too much emphasis on the difference and don't connect it to him and use it in his service, then there's a problem.
Yes.
Right? But if you understand it's him, but you understand, so it's non-different, so you see it in the proper light, but you also can appreciate the difference, so then you can engage it in his service.
Yes.
Right? So you're seeing both. If you overemphasize one or the other, it won't be in its balanced state.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Your devotees consider this mode, goodness, but never passionate ignorance, to be a direct manifestation of you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Intelligent persons thus worship your beloved transcendental form, composed of pure goodness, along with the spiritual forms of your pure devotees. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Therefore, the wise give up the impure forms of Indra and others made of Maya, and worship the Shuddha Sattva forms of the Lord and his devotees. Devotees like Narada, Sattvataha, recognize the form of Vishnu, which is Sattva. What type of Sattva is this? From this Lord arises Vaikuntha, with no fear of falling. There is fear of falling from Swarga, because there is no fear of falling, there is spiritual happiness. Not happiness arising from results of karma. Therefore, it's actually Shuddha Sattva, not material Sattva. Right? You do good work, then you get a good result. But when that result runs out, then you come back. It's not eternal, right? You do some work, you get some money. That money's not eternal. I mean, love it to be, but, you know. Does that make sense? You know, you get the money, you already decide different things you're going to spend it on, so you're actually surprised when you spend it on one, it's not there for the others. Right? Amazing. But don't worry. How you say? God made credit cards.
Can we discuss that?
It depends. It means, who are we addressing when we say don't worry? Because someone's got to worry. So, more discussion, or that covered it.
That's
yes. Yeah. So, Vaikuntha, you're there because of devotion. That platform of devotion being eternal, then one never falls from that eternal platform. Everything else, all material activities, the endeavor that's there will give you the result. But that result will be temporary. Even if it's a longer, you know, if you go to the heavenly planets for thousands of years, it's still temporary compared to the eternality of the position of the soul and the relationship with the Lord. But Vaikuntha, because bhakti is eternal, therefore, one stays in Vaikuntha eternally. One doesn't have to worry about falling down. Does that make sense?
Yes. No, when there is devotion, there is no fear.
Yeah, when there's devotion, there's no fear. There's fearlessness. Sri Markandeya continued, I offer my humble obeisances to him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the all-pervading and all-inclusive form of the universe, as well as its spiritual master. I bow down to Lord Narayana, the supremely worshipable deity, appearing as a sage, and also to the saintly Nara, the best of human beings, who is fixed in perfect goodness, fully in control of his speech, and the propagator of the Vedic literatures. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though you have a form of a human, Purushaya, you are all-pervading, whom nay, and you take the forms of animals, men, and devatas, Vishvaya. The purpose of the Lord's appearance is described. You teach bhakti, jnana, and vairaga. Not only are you a teacher, but you are worthy of worship. You are most worthy of worship. You appear in two forms. Right, so in this, bhakti, jnana, and vairaga. Right, so the different incarnate, they're teaching different things. He has all the qualities, but he's specifically teaching this. Like it says, Narad Muni teaches specifically bhakti and the Pancharatra.
Yes.
You know, that's what he teaches. Or Naishkarmya, excuse me. Naishkarmya and deity worship.
Yes.
The Pancharatra. Not, yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's always in connection with devotional service. So they're showing jnana and vairag in connection with bhakti.
Yes.
So we see as those instructions to Uddhava,
yes,
then that was, yes, is the instructions for Narayan Rishi.
Yes, yes.
Because right? they're teaching, yes, this jnana and vairag, you know, as support of bhakti.
Yes, right? Yes. Like Dattatreya or Vankivormana.
Yeah, so yes, so they all have their specific thing that they're doing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not only are you a teacher, but you are worthy of worship. But you are most worthy of worship. You appear in two forms. You are the sage Narayana and the best of humans as a sage. You have given up all possessiveness. You remain with a vow of silence. However, you preach the Vedas. Right, so if there's, you know, if you probably won't be able to strike up a conversation about them of, you know, it's a nice day today or something. You know. But if you discuss the Veda, then you'll have it. Sri Markandeya continued. A materialist, his intelligence perverted by the action of his deceptive senses, cannot recognize you at all, although you are always present within his own senses and heart, and also among the objects of his perception. Yet even though one's understanding has been covered by your illusory potency, if one attains Vedic knowledge from you, the supreme spiritual master of all, he can directly understand you. So having heard knowledge coming from the parampara, from Krishna, you know, or as we see directly from Krishna, how he speaks in you know, the Bhagavad Gita,
yes,
like this, then you can actually know the Lord.
Yes.
It's all by His grace, but the point is you can know the Lord from that knowledge coming from the Lord. So the Lord reveals how you can understand Him.
Mm-hmm.
But just with your own intelligence and sense, you can't mm-hmm. Understand.
So we need to surrender to that process of getting realization.
Yes. That's why it's so important to parampara.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then that devotion, all that. Because if that's there, then it'll work.
Yes.
Otherwise, it won't work.
Yes. So.
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This verse explained that the Lord is difficult to realize. A person with bewildered intelligence caused by deceptive sense perception does not know the Lord situated as the controller in the heart, in the life air, and in the senses. A person whose intelligence is covered by Maya does not know you, who are present visibly now as avatar. What to speak of others? Even Brahma, though he attained the Vedas from you, who are the guru of all beings, does not know you. So, if Brahma doesn't know, then no one will know. Right? Now, if Brahma's a devotee, that's how he can know. But just being Brahma doesn't mean he knows. Like, our Brahma is a devotee. So, therefore, he knows. But just, it's not because he's Brahma, it's because he's a devotee. Does that make sense? So the position of Brahma will not allow you to realize.
Mm-hmm.
Or the position of Shiva will not allow you to realize.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's not going to work, then nothing's going to work on the material platform.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only when there's devotion, that's how you can understand the Lord. So,
I'm thinking, if we take ourselves as the followers of Lord Chaitanya, and he is a, you know, specific incarnation for this age of Kali,
mm-hmm.
and then as a Yuga avatar, he comes and gives Sankirtan, but also in this particular time, he gives something special, which was not revealed before.
Yes.
So, if we follow Sankirtan movement, will it include the second part, which is, you know, the Rahasya, the Unnata Jvala Rasa?
Well, why wouldn't it?
Because it appears that it's two separate things. One is the Sankirtan movement, but if we're interested, it's often...
No, but the thing is the Sankirtan movement is how you're going to realize the Lord.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the whole point. It's the form that's used. Right? You have to have a form. So that form that's used is the Samkirtan movement. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that means it will include what's inside. Well, let us say you have a toffee.
Toffee?
Mm-hmm. You know, toffee?
Candy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has a wrapper. Right? So, without opening the wrapper, are you going to get at the toffee? Mm-hmm. So one could say, well, the wrapper is external. But that's the only way you get at the what's inside. Right. So we have to be, in other words, when we learn the philosophy and these technical points, we can't use the philosophy against the philosophy. You know, like probably the Bengali saying where you take the knife and you know, rub it on the tree to make it sharp and then use that to cut the tree.
Yeah.
You don't do that. You know, you can't do it anyway, because as soon as you try, you're on the material platform anyway. Mm-hmm. Right? So, that's the whole thing. Sometimes say, oh, but that's external. But the person saying it, they just, those words that came out of their mouth, by that same definition, that's external. So what's the value of those words that they said? So them pointing out as external is also external, so therefore, why even bother? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the whole point is that the Lord comes and takes part in that. So when he's doing the Samkirtan movement, what is he tasting?
He's tasting that specific rasa.
So then that means that medium can deliver that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all three features are there in the Samkirtan. No?
The three features, I'm not clear about that.
You say those three features about 30 times a day. Every day.
Oh, okay. Now I got it.
Okay. No?
What are they?
Hare Krishna?
You only say it 30 times a day.
Then and plus and more.
No, plus, add a few more. 30 plus. Give or take, I say. Yeah. So the point is that you have the sambandha aspect, the attractive feature. You have the abhideya, that interaction, the nourishment, and you have the prayojana of the tasting love of Godhead. So all those three features are there. So in all three of them, the others are already included. Right? Because we're hearing about the pastimes, let's say, of Lord Chaitanya Gambhira, where he's tasting that third aspect. But they're very attractive. And it's being discussed in the Association of Devotees, so it's nourishing our relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
You understand? Like that. So that's these things go on. But the point is he gives that form. Because it's bhakti, that's the thing. But in this age, bhakti takes on this form. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, as the Samkirtan movement is eternally going on in Golok, so. Right? They're not sitting under the trees and meditating or, you know what I'm saying, like that. So it's that's the thing, is that here it seems to be the lowest, there it's the highest. Is that? Sri Markandeya concluded, "My dear Lord, the Vedic literatures alone reveal confidential knowledge of your Supreme Personality. And thus even such great scholars as Lord Brahma himself are bewildered in their attempt to understand you through empirical methods. Each philosopher understands you according to his particular speculative conclusions. I worship that supreme person, knowledge of whom is hidden by the bodily designations, covering the conditioned soul's spiritual identity. Right, so that knowledge of Krishna is covered by our particular bodily designations, however we identify.
Yeah.
We're this body, we're of this species, we're intelligent, we're of this position, we're, all, whatever it is, however we identify, that covers our knowledge of Krishna. So it's by devotional service, Krishna being pleased, then that becomes removed. So we have to be able to give, be willing to give up that external identification. But it still uses the medium, we just don't identify with it. Right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though you are known by the Vedic scriptures, you are still difficult to understand. Knowledge of you is in the Vedas. That knowledge reveals you, but you are also secret. Atma Raham. No, Raha. Quote, when those who study the Vedas, then those who study the Vedas can know me. End quote. The sages, the best of whom is Brahma, though they endeavor, are bewildered concerning the nature of the Lord. Because the Vedas speak indirectly, they are bewildered about you as the only object of knowledge. Right? Because if Krishna reveals, then the same words become obvious.
Yes.
Right? But without Krishna revealing, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, as Krishna mentioned before, he likes this presentation.
Yes.
Because then that means, then one surrenders and takes up that devotional process.
Yes.
And then it's revealed. And then the same things, it's very, very clear.
Yes.
Because the Vedas... Okay. The reason is explained. The Lord has a form which is not the form which becomes the subject of various philosophies, like Vivartavad described in the Vedas. Therefore, I offer respects to he whose real nature is hidden from understanding, hidden within himself. So the form is not the form that these philosophies can contrive of.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They can only work within the modes.
Yes.
Even though they work in goodness, they still can't conceive of the form of the Lord, because the Lord's in pure goodness.
Yes.
It's only when someone's situated in goodness, the Lord reveals himself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that means goodness under the direction of the spiritual master in Parampara.
Yes.
Right? Then it naturally becomes revealed. So when there's devotion, which is pure goodness, that's when Krishna then expands that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We do something in devotion, then Krishna reciprocates.
Yes.
And then we can understand more, so we then render more service, yes. So he reciprocates.
Yes.
The BBT purport adds, even great demigods like Brahma are bewildered in their speculative attempts to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Each philosopher is covered by a unique combination of the modes of nature and thus describes the Supreme Truth according to his own material conditioning. Therefore, even strenuous empirical endeavor will never bring one to the conclusion of all knowledge. Those who try to worship God but at the same time continue speculating or acting fruitively will attain only mixed and bewildered results. To be pure, a devotee must give out all fruit of activity and mental speculation. In that way, his loving service to the Lord will yield perfect knowledge of the Supreme. Conclusion. Because the Supreme Lord is the protector and the supreme controller of all moving and non-moving beings, anyone who takes shelter of his lotus feet can never be touched by the contamination of material work, material qualities, or time. The insubstantial and temporary coverings are merely presumed to be separate from the Lord. By attaining Him, one attains everything desirable. He is, like, because when you get Him, everything else goes with Him.
Yes.
So we're thinking they're separate. So there's worship of God, then there's all this other stuff.
Yes.
But if you worship Krishna, then He being everything, everything comes along with Him.
Yes.
So that's why it's not strange that the devotees may have all facility, all desires are fulfilled by worshiping the Lord. Because you have Krishna, He being everything, you already have everything.
Yes.
He is the all-pervading and all-inclusive form of the universe, as well as its spiritual master. So he's the universe, and he's the spiritual master who explains how he's the universe. Right? The Vedic literatures alone reveal confidential knowledge of his supreme personality. And thus even great scholars as Lord Brahma himself are bewildered in their attempt to understand him through empirical methods. Because he's a person. You can't understand a person through empirical methods. But it's only if they reveal themselves. Right? Yeah. I worship that supreme person, knowledge of whom is hidden by the bodily designations covering the conditioned soul's spiritual identity. Hmm? Feeling good? Chapter 9. Markandeya Rishi sees the illusory potency of the Lord. Pratigya. The best of all learned Brahmins is one who has perfected one's life by practicing fixed meditation upon the Supreme Soul, focusing upon the Lord's one undeviating devotional service. Okay, so focusing upon the Lord, one's undeviating devotional service. Problem with English, right? It's all how you read it. Devotional service, austerity, study of the Veda and strict adherence to the regular principles. Okay. The best of all learned Brahmins is one who's done this. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Adhyaya Prakashika. The ninth chapter describes how Markandeya, saddened by seeing Maya, enters within the abdomen of a child lying on the banyan leaf, comes out again, and then falls into the ocean of devastation. Sardarta Darshani 12.9.1. Satisfied by the prayers of Sri Markandeya had offered, the Supreme Lord told him to ask for a benediction. And the sage said he wanted to see the Lord's illusory energy. The Supreme Lord Sri Hari, present before Markandeya, in the form of Narayana Rishi, replied, "So be it," and then left for Bhadarika Ashrama. One day, as Sri Markandeya was offering his evening prayers, the water of devastation suddenly flooded the three worlds. With great difficulty, Markandeya moved about all alone in this water for a long time, until he came upon a banyan tree. Lying upon a leaf of that tree was an infant boy glowing with charming effulgence. As Markandeya moved towards the leaf, he was pulled by the boy's inhalation, and just like a mosquito, drawn within his body. Inside the boy's body, Markandeya was amazed to see the entire universe, just as it had been before the annihilation. After a moment, the sage was carried out by the force of the child's exhalation and hurled back into the ocean of annihilation. Then, seeing that the child on the leaf was actually Sri Hari, the transcendental Lord situated within his own heart, Sri Markandeya tried to embrace him, but at that moment, Lord Hari, the master of all mystic power, disappeared. Then the waters of annihilation disappeared as well, and Sri Markandeya found himself in his own ashram, just as before. Right, so what was he doing? Offering his evening prayers. Right, so he's offering his prayers, and then all this happens, and then he's back, and then he's offering his prayers again. So, yeah. Shloka Anusharana, verses 1 to 34. Markandeya Rishi sees the illusory potency of the Lord. Sudha Goswami said, "The Supreme Lord Narayana, the friend of Narada, was satisfied by the proper glorification offered by the intelligent sage Markandeya. Thus the Lord addressed that excellent descendant of Bhrigu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, 'My dear Markandeya, you are indeed the best of all learned Brahmanas. You have perfected your life by practicing fixed meditation upon the Supersoul, as well as by focusing upon me, your undeviating devotional service. Your austerities, your study of the Vedas, and your strict adherence to regulative principles. We are perfectly satisfied with your practice of lifelong celibacy. Please choose whatever benediction you desire. Since I can grant your wish, you may enjoy all good fortune.'" Oh no, "May you enjoy all good fortune." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, "The plural number is used because latter in the chapter it will be seen that Shiva and Uma were also pleased." The sage, Markandeya Rishi, said, "O Lord of Lords, all glories to you. O Lord Achyuta, you remove all distress for the devotees who surrender unto you. That you have allowed me to see you is all the benediction I want. Such demigods as Lord Brahma achieved their exalted position simply by seeing your beautiful lotus feet after their minds have become mature in yoga practice. And now, my Lord, you have personally appeared before me. O lotus-eyed Lord, O crest jewel of renowned personalities, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I do wish to see your illusory potency, by whose influence the entire world, together with the ruling demigods, considers reality to be materially variegated. The BBT purport states, the conditioned soul sees the material world to be constituted of independent, separate entities. Actually, all things are united, being potencies of the Supreme Lord. Markandeya Rishi is curious to witness the exact process by which Maya, the Lord's bewildering potency, casts living entities into illusion. Suta Goswami said, O Vaishonika, thus satisfied by Markandeya's praise and worship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiling, replied, so be it, and then departed for his hermitage at Badri Gashrama. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the Lord smiled, seeing Maya as only a cause of experiencing grief. If you want that, then I will give it, since I must give you a boon. You must realize, quote, I do not like this experience of seeing Maya, end quote. Otherwise, your desire to experience it will not go away. Therefore, by experiencing suffering, you will give it up. It is like a father who orders his son to give up some action performed by his stubborn son, even though the act will cause the son suffering. But for his devotee, in order to have him give up his desire, the Lord should also give him bliss by showing his baby form within the experience of suffering. Thus the Lord smiled. Right? So he's going to... It means being absorbed in Maya is not very pleasing to the Lord, mm-hmm. Right? Because but by this, then his desire to know this will go away. Yeah. But at the same time, his sense Maya is always going to be suffering. The Lord shows himself in his baby form just to alleviate that suffering.
Yes. Yeah. In this connection, how much is it appreciated? Curiosity to know more about the mechanics of how
the point works. Is as though, but one goes through a bit of trouble. So the point being, in the last chapters, if you know Krishna, you know everything. So there's no, once you come to that point, there is no other desire. But somehow or another, Markandeya has this and is there, and we see the whole. We all get benefit from this discussion.
Yes.
But this recommend we don't bother with that because it's already it's already here. We already see it. We don't need to go through it ourselves.
Yes.
Yes.
It seems that we are actually going through this experience because we wanted it and it's happening.
Yes, yes. But he doesn't. He's not in that experience, so he's just wondering what it is that controls all these living entities. We're already in it, so we don't have to ask for that.
Previously, we obviously asked for that.
Yes, that's as Krishna said, it's still going. It'll just keep going on. So, because it's going on, then at some point we get tired of it, and then go beyond that.
Hmm.
But he's already beyond it. There's some curiosity, so then by dealing with that, then he can be situated in his natural position.
Maharaj, can we say that actually this request of Markandeya Rishi is like showing something extraordinary from Krishna? So
yes, it's something extraordinary. But the point is in any case, however it comes about, then we get the benefit from
yes.
it.
Yes.
Because then we hear what it is. We get an understanding of how Maya
yes.
works. Because
yes.
we're thinking it's very specific and like this, but it's very, everything is being controlled by it.
Yes.
So, because when we say attachment to home, family, community, like that, everybody can relate to that.
Yes.
So that means it's the same Maya with the same potencies covering everybody. So it's not he's wanting to know the specific of it. He wants to know that generic, that principle of how Maya is working. But still, it's Maya, so Krishna's not that enthusiastic. right? Yes. While we're absorbed in, you know, specific details.
Yes.
Like
yes.
That.
And enthusiastic.
And enthusiastically, yes.
Yes.
Sutta Goswami continued, thinking always of his desire to see the Lord's illusory energy, the sage remained in his ashram, meditating constantly upon the Lord within fire, the sun, the moon, water, the earth, air, lightning, and his own height, heart. I guess he was tall, right? His own heart, and worshipping him with paraphernalia conceived within his mind. But sometimes, overwhelmed by the waves of love for the Lord, Markandeya would forget to perform his regular worship. O Brahmana Shonaka, best of the Bhrigus, one day while Markandeya was performing his evening worship on the bank of the Pushpabhadra, a great wind suddenly arose. So Shonaka's in the Bhrigu line. Markandeya also you mentioned before, right? He's in the Bhrigu line.
Yes.
Yeah. That wind created a terrible sound and brought in its wake fearsome clouds, which were accompanied by lightning and roaring thunder that poured down on all sides, torrents of rain as heavy as wagon wheels. That's big, because
yes.
Indian wagon wheels are really big. Then the four great oceans appeared on all sides, swallowing up the surface of the earth with their wind-tossed waves. In these oceans were terrible sea monsters, fearful whirlpools, and ominous rumblings. The sage saw all the inhabitants of the universe, including himself, tormented within and without by the harsh winds, the bolts of lightning, and the great waves rising beyond the sky. As the whole earth flooded, he grew perplexed and fearful. Even as Markandeya looked on, the rain poured down from the clouds. The rain pouring down from the clouds filled the ocean more and more until that great sea, its waters violently whipped into terrifying waves by hurricanes, covered up the earth's islands, mountains, and continents. The water inundated the earth, outer space, heaven, and the celestial region. So a bit more, how you say, water than the Mayans envisioned. Right? Indeed, the entire expanse of the universe was flooded in all directions, and out of all its inhabitants, only Markandeya remained. His matted hair scattered, the great sage wandered about alone in the water as if dumb and blind. Tormented by hunger and thirst, attacked by monstrous marakas and timingila fish, and battered by the wind and waves. Okay, so marakas are big. You know, and Tim and Gile are bigger than that. And battered by the wind and waves, he moved aimlessly through the infinite darkness into which he had fallen. As he grew increasingly exhausted, he lost all sense of direction and could not tell the sky from the earth. At times he was engulfed by the great whirlpools. Sometimes he was beaten by the mighty waves. And at other times aquatic monsters threatened to devour him as they attacked one another. Sometimes he felt lamentation, bewilderment, misery, happiness, or fear. And at other times he experienced such terrible illness and pain that he felt himself dying. Footnote 13. Vriti, since the sage was situated in pure goodness and thus could not be affected by the ruse of King Indra, to make the sage feel lusty, there's no question of becoming affected by material lamentation, bewilderment, misery, etc. He only experienced these things because he requested the Lord to show him his illusory energy. Mm-hmm. And so this experience goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. He's beyond, so he's one.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Countless millions of years passed as Markandeya wandered about in that deluge. His mind bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu. Deluge, is that French?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's good. Otherwise.
Deluge.
Huh?
Deluge.
Deluge. Deluge. Okay. That sounds better. His mind bewildered by the illusory... Yeah, even they say it, even still in English they get it wrong, right? His mind bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once, while wandering in the water, the Brahmana Markandeya discovered a small island, upon which stood a young banyan tree bearing blossoms and fruits. Upon a branch of the northeast portion of that tree, he saw an infant boy lying within a leaf. The child's effulgence was swallowing up the darkness. The infant's dark blue complexion was the color of a flawless emerald. His lotus face shone with a wealth of beauty, and his throat bore marks like the lines of a conch shell. He had a broad chest, a finely shaped nose, beautiful eyebrows, and lovely ears that resembled pomegranate flowers, and that had inner folds like a conch shell's spirals. The corners of his eyes were reddish like the whorl of a lotus, and the effulgence of his coral-like lips slightly reddened the nectarian, enchanting smile on his face. As he breathed, his splendid hair trembled, and his deep navel became distorted by the moving folds of skin on his abdomen, which resembled a banyan leaf. The exalted Brahmana watched with amazement as the infant took hold of one of his lotus feet with his graceful fingers, placed the toe within his mouth, and began to suck. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. He held his toe and sucked it, thinking, "What is the sweetness of my lotus foot? Since many of my devotees attempt to taste that sweetness, I should also try to taste it." Sutta Goswami continued, "As Markandeya beheld the child, all his weariness vanished. Indeed, so great was his pleasure that the lotus of his heart, along with his lotus eyes, fully blossomed, the hairs on his body stood on end." Right, so that's why the Lord smiled, because he was going to show them this. Confused as to the identity of the wonderful infant, the sage approached him. Just then the child inhaled, drawing Markandeya within his body like a mosquito. There, the sage found the entire universe arrayed as it had been before its dissolution. Seeing this, Markandeya was most astonished and perplexed. The sage saw the entire universe, the sky, heavens, and earth, the stars, mountains, oceans, great islands, and continents, the expanses in every direction, the saintly and demoniac living beings, the forests, countries, rivers, cities, and mines, the agricultural villages and cow pastures, and the occupational and spiritual activities of the various social divisions. He also saw the basic elements of creation along with all their byproducts, as well as time itself, which regulates the progression of countless ages within the days of Brahma. In addition, he saw everything else created for use in material life. All this he saw manifested before him as if it were real. He saw before him the Himalaya mountains, the Pushpavadra River, and his own hermitage, where he had the audience of the sages Naranarayana. Then, as Markandeya beheld the entire universe, the infant exhaled, expelling the sage from his body and casting him back into the ocean of disillusion. In that vast sea, again saw the banyan tree growing on the tiny island and the infant boy lying within the leaf. The child glanced at him from the corner of his eyes with a smile imbued with the nectar of love. And Markandeya took him into his heart through his eyes. Greatly agitated, the sage ran to embrace the Transcendental Personality of Godhead. At that moment, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original master of all mysticism and who is hidden within everyone's heart, became invisible to the sage. Just as the achievements of an incompetent person can suddenly vanish. After the Lord disappeared, O Brahmana, the banyan tree, the great water, and the dissolution of the universe all vanished as well. And in an instant, Markandeya found himself back in his own hermitage, just as before. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Again thrown into the ocean, he wandered about for millions of years, experiencing hardship, and then saw the child on the banyan leaf on the upraised portion of earth. The Lord glanced at him with a smile of prema that was like nectar. Again he entered the body of the Lord when he inhaled. It should be understood from the latter statements that he went in and came out seven times. The Lord then became invisible just as desire for wealth of a poor man comes and goes. Within one instant of time, seven kalpas of time, seven disillusions had been contracted by the inconceivable energy of the Lord. So that's how, you know, he's wondering, because they were talking about these one day into 2 days, but actually it happened 7 times. So that's 7 kalpas of Brahma. Conclusion. The best of all learned Brahmins is one who has perfected one's life by practicing fixed meditation on the Supreme Soul, focusing upon the Lord, one's undeviating devotional service, austerity, study of the Vedas, strict adherence, and strict adherence to regulated principles.
Yes.
And so he's gone back to his ashram, because those things are always there. Every kalpa, they'll be there. So then again, he's back in his ashram. But it's not that it was just all in his mind, but he experienced that. But the point is it's the same, because it's always the same thing.
Yes.
The material world is always the same thing over and over and over again.
But he was always focused on the Lord.
Yes.
With all this, you know, very, very long time, you know, and intense experience.
Yes, but he's remembering the Lord. It has to be long enough that he's going to give up wanting to know about this, so everything has to be there. At the same time, as it's short enough that it's not too much of a disturbance. Chapter 10, Lord Shiva and Uma glorify Markandeya Rishi. Pratigya, association with saintly devotees is man's highest achievement. So that's from the morning? He was talking about association, so.
Yes.
So that's it. Just you find those devotees that it's one is inspired in devotional service, and that's the highest achievement. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 10th chapter describes Markandeya's meeting with Shiva and Uma, his prayers to them, their pleasure at his prayers, and their bestowal of boons to him. Sardarta Darshani 2:10:1. Once, as Lord Shiva was traveling in the sky with his wife, Parvati, he came across Sri Markandeya emerged in meditative trance. At the request of Parvati, Lord Shiva presented himself before the sage to grant him the result of his austerities. Coming out of his trance, Sri Markandeya saw Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the three worlds, together with Parvati, and he worshipped them by offering them obeisances, words of greeting, and a sitting place. Right, can you see? Because it says just it can so simply that is what you can do, like that. So worship doesn't mean that it has to be, you know what I'm saying? Because we say worship, we mean all the lamps and everything like that. Yes. No, it's what you have. Yes. So here, offering obeisances, words of greeting, giving them a sitting place, right? And so, and Markandeya Rishi, then he had more things. I mean, with the Narayan Rishi, he had more things he offered. But that's what it means. So we always have to be. You know, there's variety to these things. What's appropriate for the situation, yes.
So it appears that his main practice was Manas Puja. He did most of his things in the mind. Is that correct?
Seems that there's a lot of meditation. So it just depends on the devotee. Just like you see in remembering, then that's Prahlad Maharaj is very prominent in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the best in that. So Markandeya Rishi appears that he does that a lot. Though it seems he was doing some other things. Like that, you know, because he had you know, this other paraphernalia, sandalwood and these other things. So how, you know, that was working, I'm not sure, but,
you know. But it seems that he was mainly alone.
That's the thing, the sages, they generally sit alone, especially those who do meditation and stuff like that. Like in Tapaloka, you know, then they have their own place that they stay there, and occasionally they'll come together and discuss, you know, philosophical points and all that, and then they'll go back to their places. So that's the things the principle is that having the association of saintly devotees, that's the best thing.
Yes.
But there's no need of social interaction.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Yes.
So if there's someone there, they're happy to interact in this and that. It doesn't bother. But there's no need. They don't feel bad that they got to talk to somebody or they got to, you know, like this. They're just always absorbed in the Lord. So they can be with others. They can be alone. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
So, Then Lord Shiva praised the saintly devotees of the personality of Godhead and requested Sri Markandeya to choose whatever benediction he desired. Markandeya begged for the unflinching devotion of the Supreme Lord Sri Hari to the devotees of the Supreme Lord and to Lord Shiva himself. Satisfied with Markandeya's devotion, Lord Shiva awarded him the boons of renown, freedom from old age and death until the time of universal dissolution. So that means until the end of the life of Brahma.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Knowledge of all three phases of time. Renunciation, realized knowledge, and the position of a teacher of the Puranas. Those who chant and hear the story of Markandeya Rishi will attain liberation from material life, which is based on the accumulated desires generated from fruitive work. Right? Mm-hmm. So when you give up that attachment to the results of fruitive work, or to perform them to get those results, or to have the facilities that you can perform something to get the results, mm-hmm. like that, then that's liberation. That's going up a varga, yes. right? Beyond yes. the material.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is Markandeya Purana?
There is Markandeya Purana. So it's a prominent yes. Purana. Is it one of the mode of goodness, or its passion, or you know, anyone knows? You know? No?
We'll come across.
Huh?
We'll come across in next 2 years.
Okay.
And also, Maharaj, I think he'll be the next one of the seven sages also.
He'll be one of the seven sages. Oh, that'll be described, because doesn't it tell who all the different sages and stuff? Who's the seven sages?
I don't know. I can't remember.
That if it's here or somewhere.
It is there in ninth canto.
Oh, okay, it was in the ninth canto. Okay. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 4. Verses 1 to 42. Lord Shiva and Uma glorify Markandeya Rishi. Sutta Goswami said, the Supreme Lord Narayana had arranged this opulent display of his bewildering potency. Markandeya Rishi, having experienced it, took shelter of the Lord, right? Because that was the whole point.
Yes.
He's taking shelter of the Lord, but he has this interest. So the Lord said, okay, you fulfill it in such a way that it'll go away.
Yes.
And then he just surrenders to the Lord. Yes. So that's Krishna's method. You have a desire, he'll fulfill it, but in such a way that you'll give up that. So, yeah.
Can we say that this experience is a dreamlike experience? In his case?
But in the material world is a dreamlike experience.
This one was long.
Yeah, well, this was seven kalpas, yeah. The thing is it is a dream, because we're thinking it's something that it's not, right? Dream state is controlled by passion. So then thinking things are not what they are, for sense gratification of passion, or thinking that they're not what they are due to illusion, that'll be ignorance. So seeing them in the proper light, according to Shastra, then that's not illusion. Right?
Yeah.
So, in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, then it's the best of them, So you're trying to go beyond that. Does that make sense? Because when you always see his devotees, when they come to that point of realization, they'll mention like waking up from a dream.
Right.
Yes.
Like that. Though they're awake, they're conscious in the three states of the consciousness, they're in wakeful state. But because it's not in connection with the Lord, therefore it's as much good as dreaming. Because we think, oh, this will happen, that'll happen, I'll get this, I'll be happy.
Yes.
Like that. So, it doesn't matter how it's worked out. You can say, is it real? It means it is real, because just like our life, our conscience is like a dream, so then...
But the difference seems to be is that he is just observing it from external point of view. He's not involved directly. He just sees like a movie.
Yeah, but he's there. He's in the ocean of devastation.
Yes.
He is floating around in it, and the Timangilas and the Makalas are there. They probably see him and are going to devour him. Then another one comes along, and then they fight over who's going to eat him. And then, and that way he floats off.
Actually, another one comes and devours this one. It's that big.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I guess if after devouring the other one, why would they want to devour him, right?
It's like keep seeing bigger and bigger. There's the biggest one, and then something comes
along and it devours that. Yes, it's just even bigger. Yeah, so you can't imagine how big these things are. Yeah, because I mean, they have to be big enough to swim around in the waters of devastation.
Yes.
You know, they have to be very big. Sri Markandeya said, O Lord Hari, I take shelter of the soles of your lotus feet, which bestow fearlessness upon all who surrender to them. Even the great demigods are bewildered by your illusory energy, which appears to them in the guise of knowledge. Right? So you think you know, but you're actually an illusion. Because you know so many material things, so you think you're very knowledgeable, but you're actually just absorbed in material nature. So that's the problem with material knowledge. So unless it's engaged, when it is engaged in the Lord's service, then it's not mundane. But until it is mundane. Right? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, Jnana Kashaya means with the appearance of knowledge where no knowledge exists.
Nice one. Okay.
Sutta Goswami said, Lord Rudra, traveling in the sky on his bull and accompanied by his consort Rudrani, as well as his personal associates, observe Markandeya in trance. Goddess Uma, seeing the sage, addressed Lord Girisha. My lord, just see this learned Brahmana, his body, mind, and senses motionless in trance. He is as calm as the waters of the ocean when the wind has ceased and the fish remain still. Therefore, my lord, since you bestow perfection on the performers of austerity, please award this sage the perfection that is obviously due to him. Right? Now she'll know, she being the illusory energy, she knows who's in Maya and who's not. Right? Lord Shiva replied. Right? So in other words, she was there before Santa. Right? Lord Shiva replied, surely this saintly Brahmana does not desire any benediction, not even liberation itself. For he has attained pure devotional service unto the inexhaustible personality of Godhead. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Lord Shiva says, he does not want cities like Anima, to which Uma replies, then give him liberation. Lord Shiva says, he does not want that either, to which Uma replies, then give him bhakti. Lord Shiva says, he has already attained that also. It's like, what are we going to give him? Right, you know, so they're so humble, right? Yes. You know, even though they're right, but it's, yeah. Lord Shiva continues, still, my dear Bhavani, let us talk with this saintly personality. After all, association with saintly devotees is man's highest achievement. Right, so they're going to associate to get the benediction of his son. Sutta Goswami said, having spoken thus, Lord Shankara, the shelter of all of pure souls, master of all spiritual sciences, and controller of all embodied living beings, approached the sage. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Shiva is called the shelter of the devotees because he gives bhakti, which they desire. He is not only the shelter of the devotees, but also, but of those with material desires. You know, not only... He is Lord of all types of knowledge. This is not at all astonishing, since he is the Lord of all beings, Ishvara. Mm-hmm. Right, so being the Lord of all beings, he's the Lord of the devotees and the materialists. Mm-hmm. You know, and he know, has all knowledge. So it means the highest is devotion to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Yes. But he has all this, he knows everything.
Yes.
Right?
The topic between Shiva and Parvati must be quite exceptional because he's the Lord of everyone and she's Maya.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yes. But it says, we have to remember she's his energy because he is Purusha.
Shiva.
Yes. He's Purusha, but he's that transformed. He's like milk into yogurt.
Yes.
So he's Purusha because Krishna has his external energy. Therefore, he comes to Shiva too to take care of that energy.
Yes.
But he himself, as Vishnu, doesn't.
Yes.
Only in this transform. Because just as the internal potency transforms, so he also transforms.
Yes.
So, Markandeya is very fortunate that Uma herself wants to bestow upon him bhakti.
Yes.
If he would also get that, then it will never be in Maya then.
Yes. But we also see is that after he was already nicely situated, that's why the Lord came. Then he wanted to know something about Maya because he's above that. So then being shown, so now he's just focused on the Lord. So technically, as Lord Shiva said, he already has everything. He's already on that position. Like that. So therefore, Shiva's pointing out, yes, we'll go and speak to him, not to give benedictions as much as to get his association. That's the position. Okay, Suta Goswami continued. Because Markandeya's material mind had stopped functioning, the sage failed to notice that Lord Shiva and his wife, the controllers of the universe, had personally come to see him. Markandeya was so absorbed in meditation that he was unaware of either himself or the external world. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, not only was Markandeya unaware of Shiva, but he was unaware of himself in the sense of his identity as I, and was unaware of the universe identified as mine. Right, so he didn't have that separate. He's just servant of Krishna, absorbed in Krishna. Right, so there's no that technically. That's why we see his bhakti already includes all the jnana.
Yes.
Right, the jnana, it's already jnana yoga karma is already included. If you're absorbed in Krishna, then you automatically attain all those things that you're trying to attain through jnana yoga.
Yes. But if we stop to be Krishna,
then we may need a few benedictions. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.